better.
Yeah. All right. Then we go into a whole section of Proverbs of Solomon. 25 through 29 are actually Proverbs still of Solomon, but they were ones that were recorded during the time of Hezekiah, the king. His scribes recorded those, and we can see that at the very first verse of chapter 25, if you read that. And then chapter 30 are titled as the words of Agur, and then 31 are the words of King Lemuel. Actually, it says that there are words that his mother told him, which we often know as the worthy woman. That's the chapter that describes the worthy woman. So let's go through and in the turn to Proverbs, the first chapter, if you're not open to it. And I think the first 2 through 6 really tell us what the purpose of the Proverbs are. In the first part of chapter 2, it says, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of the understanding, to receive the instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. So even for those who are not simple, who are not naive, these writings would actually help someone to continue to increase in understanding. And then in verse 6, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. So those who may not understand some of the things that are occurring, this may help put that puzzle back together so that they can see that and understand it. Now, in verse 7, we can see that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. So there was a question that I had and I failed to ask, but what is a proverb? That's right. It's like a truism, right? A lesson for life. And so now what's the difference in just a regular proverb and what we have here is a biblical proverb? It's inspired. So either the saying itself is inspired, or it was God inspired the men to gather these particular thoughts together because they're of use to us, right? So that's the important part here. Most of these have some sort of spiritual direction. And then what do we read in verse 7? What's the whole purpose of why we have the Proverbs? The fear of the Lord. Right? It's trying to drive us to place the Lord and fearing Him as key in our life. Right? This wisdom should help us all as we read through here, through several different ones. It should really help us all to understand further things that we ought to do. And in doing these things, we are reverent to the Lord and we're better understanding and doing what the Lord would have us do. Right? It helps to set us in the right path. Now, as we said, it's addressed to the simple-minded person or the son. What's the purpose of that? Why would we want to read this or want to impart some of this wisdom to our child? I guess it kind of goes back to what is the definition of wisdom? Knowledge. Right. Does not part of the definition of wisdom kind of tie back to our own life experiences, right? So the whole purpose here is we have a lot of sayings, we have a lot of writings that are tied together that help to explain some of these life experiences that others have had. Because have you ever learned anything the hard way? Because I have, right? Learned a lot of things the hard way. And do we want our children to just, you know, they'll figure it out, right? That's not what we are to do. We'll get to the statement that you said a while ago, Albert, which is, you know, train up a child in the way he shall go, right? That's one of the last proverbs that we'll list today. But I think that's, I think if we look at it from that perspective, we even as adults can learn much from this so that we do not have to go through this the hard way. Right? And so we all need to look to that. What was that? That's right. We can learn from the mistakes of others, right? We have a saying, and as far as, you know, in our own society, right, that you should learn from history so that you what? So that we don't repeat it, right? Sometimes we forget because we repeat it a lot, it seems. But that's certainly the main reason that these proverbs are written down, that we have the wisdom of these of men, and specifically of Solomon, as he says in First Kings that he had spoke over 3,000 proverbs. So they all wouldn't be listed here, but a significant number of them were. All right. So we're going to go through and break this down. There are different ways you could study this book, just like there are different ways you can study the book of Psalms, right? We're going to follow the way that it was laid out in our booklets. There's a series of subjects, and underneath those subjects, there's a series of questions that are intended to drive us to look through the Proverbs, look at various verses along the way, and kind of gain some knowledge from that. So we're going to start with the area of poverty, wealth, industriousness, and laziness. So instead of me clicking all day, I'm just going to go ahead and throw up the slide, and then we can walk through it. But the first question that we had were, what are some of the reasons that we see listed in the verses that are on the board, but also the other verses that are there in that question? What are some of the reasons that we see that men live in poverty or are in poverty? Yeah, one is they're just lazy. They're a sluggard, it says in verse 9, right? How long will you slumber? What does a lazy man do? He sleeps a lot sometimes, right? What about in 21, verse 25, right? What's the desire of a lazy man? Does that lead yourself to being out of poverty? In 12 verse 11, it says, he who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding. What's that? That's somebody that's necessarily lazy? Not necessarily, but where is their focus? Right? Their focus isn't on doing things that is going to help them move out of their situation, but just following every whim that they would desire. We'll see in 28 verse 19, one who chases their fantasies, right? Same thought process of if we do not do our work and put our hand to that work, then what are we going to find ourselves? We may find ourselves in a situation where, there's poverty. What about in 22:13, something about the lazy man that we learn here? There's a lion outside. What does that mean? What do we get from that? That's right. So there's always this situation. I consider it, right? We always have an excuse, right? The lazy man always has an excuse. Well, I can't go outside because there's a lion out there. I can't do this. They can always find themselves in a situation where they have excuses to not do something. Let's turn to chapter 24, and I want to read 30 through 34. Have somebody read. Jeff, would you mind reading chapter 24, 30 through 34 for us? All right, so here's a situation where we see someone who is lazy, and what is their property? What do they own? What does that look like? Right, it looks like they're lazy, right? And we can say that now because we understand. Have we ever seen anybody here, even in town? Do you drive by a house and you go, "What's up with that?" Right? What's up with that particular? I mean, somebody decided to not take care of their stuff. The fence has fallen down. It's been that way for years. And yet, you may know that person and know they're completely capable of doing and fixing that, but yet they're choosing not to, right? And so what's something about the lazy man that we can glean from that? And I would say, is it not pretty obvious to others sometimes? We often say, I tell my children this, but right, you're known by your fruits, right? Is that not a fruit of being lazy? You just allow things to happen and you never get around to it. You always have an excuse for it. So I think that tells us a lot about one who is lazy. What are some of the consequences now of one that is lazy? Obviously, it kind of goes with some of the things that we just read. Proverbs 10:26, I think the first one up there, was to say, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. Does anybody, I don't know what the vinegar to the teeth is, but have you ever gotten smoke in your eyes? Anyone? How's that feel? What is it? It's like an irritant, right? And what do you want to do with that? You want to get it out, right? You want to remove yourself from that situation. You want to get it out of your eyes. But, so, a consequence of being lazy is, okay, so, maybe this is a better example. At work, have you ever had to work with somebody who has a reputation for not helping, right? You're in a situation, you have a big project, you have a team that shows up, and now your team is only like four people, but you know two of them and their reputation, right? And their reputation is they'll do anything and everything, and work is hard to get out of work than to do anything about work, right? So sometimes I think a consequence of the laziness is that reputation that person has laid out. It's very, very important that we don't get a reputation like that, right? In 18 verse 9, one who is slack in his work is a brother to one who destroys, one that is a destroyer. It's 15:19. The way of the lazy man is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of the upright is a highway. You know, it's a much more difficult road if you choose the, what many would consider the easy path, right? It's the lazy path. And yet some choose to do that, right? I think one of the really important ones here is 26:16, because certainly seeing individuals with this kind of attitude, and one that we all have to watch, but the lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. Is that not true? Can the lazy man at times be the one that just says, well, I don't know why this is the way it should be, and it's obvious to me that all these things are, right? He will build up this wisdom and the things that he has done, and feel like he's so much wiser. So, in chapter 3 and verse 9, we're told, and this is, remember, the father talking to the son about how he should be. In chapter 3 and verse 9, it says, "Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce." So how can the lazy man fulfill that? You see some of the consequences of being lazy? You can't even do the things that you ought to toward the Lord if you choose this pathway. That's correct. And really the next question here is what is the responsibilities of those that have the means to help others? So you're absolutely right, Randall. And so here's a few verses that we have listed here that talk about our responsibility when we have the means to help those who may be in need. Right? In 21 verse 13, it says, "Whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given." In chapter 11, verses 24 through 26, chapter 11, 24 through 26, it's up on the overhead, but I think three verses that are important here. If I turn to the right chapter. "There's one who scatters yet increases more, and there's one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grains, but blessings will be on the head of him who sells it." So, it is our responsibility to make sure that we do assist others that may not have the same ability or capability as we may. And this kind of parallels why I wrote this down, right? This parallels and reminds me of what Jesus says in Matthew, the 25th chapter. In Matthew 25, verses 34 through 40, actually kind of goes through 45, but if we remember that scene, Jesus is telling them, "The king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom.'" And then in 35, he starts the reason, right? "For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." And you look at verse 37, and these are the righteous ones. And their question is, "When did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you as a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick and in prison?" When did that happen? And what's his answer back to them? "And as much as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me." And then you see the converse in the next few verses, 41 through about 46, where the same thing is said to those who do not inherit the kingdom. And then, you know, their response is, "But we didn't see you in these situations." But he said, "Yeah, but you didn't do it to anyone." So we do have a responsibility when we do have means ourselves to make sure that we assist others. And as Randall just, you know, talked about, you know, that's important that you have that kind of attitude, not only to not be lazy and work and drive to do the things that you ought to yourself, but to be considerate of the fact that, you know, all these gifts are given to you from the Lord. And if you're going to do His will, then you're not only just going to do the work and the hard things to do to gain, you know, enough to sustain yourself and your family, but you're also going to fulfill all the laws. Right. Equal 14, verse 23, saying, in all labor, there is profit. All right. So then, the next question kind of goes around to what does wealth guarantee? Right? Does it guarantee an enduring happiness or honor or a good reputation or success? Is that what wealth is about? Is that why we need to strive to be wealthy? What does 15:16 say? Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. Right? We can get ourselves into trouble when we have great wealth because we will lose our fear of the Lord. So we have to be very careful. I think something that happened to Solomon himself, actually. But 22:1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. If you think about some of the wealthy today, actually I was listening to this lesson when it was taught in 2009, and ironically, Scott mentioned Donald Trump as being wealthy. Is that kind of appropriate today? And we would mention Donald Trump again. But what about men like Donald Trump, billionaires, you know, Bill Gates, etc.? There's lots of men who have great, great wealth, but where do we not see their focus? We don't see it in spiritual things. Right? We don't see it in the Lord. And so if you gain great wealth and then put your faith in that, That is a problem. You do not fear the Lord. Right? That's right. That's right. In 16 verse 8, better is little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. 19 verse 1 is very close to that. Better is the poor who walks in integrity than the one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. So wealth does not guarantee that we will have constant happiness, but can wealth provide us some happiness? Yeah. And sometimes that happiness is very temporary, right? Everybody, you know, may want the new house, the new car, but what happens with the new house and the new car in 5 years and in 10 years, right? The happiness that you may gain from that is temporary. And then what happens to all that we have once we leave this earth? It stays. Right. Heard many times, right? You don't really see a U-Haul on the way to the gravesite. You can't take it with you. So the wealth that we do have, we should fear the Lord and use it in the way that He would have us to. I think very, very important for us to consider those things. All right. To move on, now we're going to look at, briefly, the dangers of intoxicating beverages. That's kind of a theme that runs through here. There's several verses on that. Sorry. So in chapter 20 and verse 1, it says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. So I think the question asks for us to kind of think about the things that may be the physical effects, the emotional effects, and the financial effects. As we read through some of these Proverbs, let's think about that. You know, what are some of the physical effects of drinking or drunkenness? And right here in 20 and verse 1, it says, strong drink is a brawler, right? He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. Don't mix with the wine bibber or the gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. That's 23, verses 20, through 21. If someone would turn over to chapter 23 and read verses 29 through 35 for us. Chapter 23, 29 through 35. All right. I think that section there is a pretty vivid and quite truthful look at one who is truly tied around, alcohol, intoxicating beverages, right? It talks about, you know, one that has woe, one that has sorrow, one that's complaining, contention, right? Red eyes. And what is it that they do when they want to forget about their troubles? I hear that a lot from folks that I know that just, you know, that have a desire to go drink. I just want to forget about what happened today. I just want to not think about that anymore. So they turn to alcohol, right? And then we see there in the end, I think some of the things that are, you know, pretty amazing, but we certainly see this today. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. Right? When you get to the point where it is so numbing, right, that things happen and you don't even know that they happen, that it's not even a feeling anymore. And that's what some people are looking for. But I think one of the key pieces is in verse 31. What is the warning in 31? Right? Yeah. That's right. It bites like a serpent and stings like a viper, right? How many of us want to be bitten by a snake, right? Some have that experience, right? But is that an enjoyable time? I mean, you know, spending days on end in hospitals and dealing with, you know, unknown consequences that may occur, right? This is a poison, right, that this snake can inject into this human. Yet here it's looked at and how is it even sold today? And, you know, sadly, some of the, you know, I guess funniest or best commercials that exist are about what? They're about alcohol, right? They really are. Yeah, they're hilarious. I mean, I'm not sure that I would think of, you know, having horses playing football, right? But, that's right. That's right. And every time you see it, all these people there are having such a great time. It looks like it's wonderful. But what don't you see? And that is what's described in 32 through 35, right? And they put that little, now they have to by law, I think, right? And it's like, you know, we're just drink responsibly. Okay. So that's the words of wisdom that they're going to provide to you. Just, well, you should just drink responsibly. But to pretend like, some people will not be enticed by the way that it looks or by the way that it smells or by the way that it makes you feel, that's incorrect. And so our concern is to take heed and to make sure that we realize that there's more to that than just the way it looks, right? In 31, I think the key piece there is, talking about, you know, it's not for kings, and this is, during the chapter about the worthy woman, right? But, you know, his mother is telling him, right, it's not for kings to drink wine or princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. So, some of the consequences from doing that is actually some of the reasons that some people do it specifically, because they feel like they have nothing to live for, or they want to forget what they're doing or dealing with, and so they turn to that. Right. 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 And I think in verse 32 of Proverbs, the 23rd chapter, right? At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. So how many of us would choose to go to that? Right? Ever. Right? That's, you know, I just want a little bit of poison. Right? Not a lot. I just want a little bit. Right? So no, that's very important that we should look at this and understand, if these are the results of it, then why do we want to even get involved in it at any level? If that's the purpose, if that's what we're trying to avoid, then we should not be involved in that at all. All right, so quickly, about to run out of time here, I think about 5 more minutes, but now we talk about their parents and children. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people like to quote, right, is about this, this corporal punishment or the physical punishment piece of this, right? In chapter 13, verse 24, it talks about, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Right? So I would say that, you know, many today, would be very, I guess, surprised that the word beat or using the rod for rebuke is used here. But I think just like with everything, can something be overdone? So, we're talking about using the rod to correct, right? And then verse 22, or chapter 22, verse 15, it says, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, the rod of correction will drive it far from him. So when should the rod be used, and then how should it be used? Is that not what our main goals or duties as parents are? I know that, you know, with two children of my own, there are certainly some forms of discipline that were more effective with one than with the other. Right? And we all face that with different folks, right? With different children. But if we choose to remove an entire form of correction, then I think that we do ourselves a disservice, and we're certainly not talking about, you know, beating a child. And unfortunately, we see that today, right? We see people who have taken it to the point where they beat their own children. Sometimes I think that's tied in with the last subject, right? They are intoxicated themselves, and that's just how they lash out. But as parents, if we teach our children and we correct them and we reprove them immediately, and sometimes we have to use the rod of correction to do that, I think that, you know, for the most part, when you look back and you ask anybody who has ever, you know, grown up in a situation like that and has been, you know, what we call spanked today, right, has been spanked in their own lives, right? What can they look back and see? That's right. Yeah. Not that anybody would have enjoyed it necessarily at the time, but they can look back and they can see how that helped shape them. Right? Right. And then I think, we'll get to some here in a moment, but, you know, you actually see the love of your parents, right, come through because they cared enough to make sure that they guided you properly. And sometimes that took some more extreme than, you know, go sit in the corner, right? So here's one that talks about the results. And it's again in chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, specifically 12, for whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as the Father, the Son, in whom he delights. So, yes, he will give delight to your soul, right? When you correct your son, and he will give you rest, he will give delight to your soul. So it's important that we do teach our children, and that we teach them in a way that is appropriate, proper, and then specifically, I think one of the key pieces here is what is the purpose and what is the response that's expected, right? What's the purpose of disciplining your child? And here we get to what Albert said early on in 22 and verse 6. It's to train up our child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Right? Now remember, just like we said with all of these, right, these things are general truisms. Does that mean that nobody will ever depart because they were trained up properly? Right? And unfortunately, the answer to that is no. Right, because we all have free will, we all make our own choices. But, you know, if you don't train them up properly, then what are your chances? So you have to consider what the point is, what we're trying to get to, and how we need to get there. So chasing your son while there's hope, do not set your heart on his destruction, and then the responsibility on the child is to listen to your father who begot you. Do not despise your mother when she is old. Right? It's just as important for the child to understand that they need to listen as it is that the parents need to start, at an early age and continue on. It's not going to be just a one single statement. All right, so we'll continue on Wednesday night.